HPPodCraft.com.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the bonus content for March on Strange Studies of Strange Stories. I'm Chris Lackey.
And I'm Chad Pfeiffer. And as you all know, March is for Draculas. Some have asked why. Why, Daddy? Why is March for Draculas?
Well, there's so many reasons.
There are so many reasons. Chief among them, March is when the days start getting longer. Daylight savings kicks in. It's the equivalent of last call for Draculas.
Yeah.
They love those long, dark winters.
They sure do.
And they just got to get some good last blood drinks in before they go on a lighter summer schedule.
Yeah.
So that's one reason we do it.
And spring gets busy for humans as well. So it's also a good time to watch some vampire movies.
It is indeed. And since we mentioned the adaptations of I Am Legend during the coverage of the novel, we thought, you know, we'd find something else to watch and talk about here.
Yeah.
Maybe something a little more vampire-y, because I Am Legend is borderline zombie movie. That discussion really became more about excluding things to watch rather than really getting excited about something.
Yeah, yeah. For me, the topic of this bonus content is vampire movies we're not going to cover on bonus content.
Well, when we spoke about it last week after we recorded, you know, I said, maybe why don't we both watch Blood Red Sky on Netflix?
Yeah.
Because I'd watched a little of the beginning and liked it. And friend of the show, Jeff C. Carter, I just went for a walk with him the other day, and he said he loved it. I said, let's give that a whirl.
Yeah.
The thing is, when I sat down with Heather to watch it, we realized, oh, we've already watched this whole thing. And that's not really a dig on the movie, because we both liked it.
Sure.
But it's more of a comment on the fact that there's just so much content in general.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely just so much vampire stuff out there. It's just hard for anything to stick out these days. Because if I'd seen Blood Red Sky as a teenager,
oh my God,
I would have worn out the tape, you know, like Near Dark or Innocent Blood.
Yeah.
I don't know if these are Innocent Blood's a great movie, but it was the only cross-genre vampire film that was out there. So it was such a rarity that you really treasured it.
Well, I was living in Pittsburgh when they shot Innocent Blood, and I went down to the set a few times, and I got to see John Landis from a distance.
Mm-hmm.
And was like, oh, there he is. John Landis is telling people to do stuff.
For me, the bonus topic became, you know, is there any life left in the vampire?
Hmm?
Is this just a played out genre? Could this perhaps be the last Marches for Draculas?
Oh, gosh.
I don't know. I guess listen till the end and we'll all find out. But first, let's talk about Blood Red Sky.
It's also known as Transatlantic 473. It is a 2021 British-German co-production, and it was on Netflix. It still is. It is half German, half English. The movie itself, like the language spoken, all the English speakers seem to be Scots from Scotland. So a lot of those actors are, even the guy, one of the guys on the plane, there's this shitty businessman guy that treats everybody terrible, and he's Scottish. I don't know what that's about. It was directed by Peter Thorworth. He's a German film director, and I went and looked at his filmography. He's shot stuff in Germany, so I've never heard of any of it.
I think it's a symptom of the need for foreign investment in film financing, because these things are so expensive to make that if it doesn't have a star or a known brand, you have to seek foreign investment. But I'm really pleased to see more hybrid language movies getting made these days, more international productions. I think it's really cool.
I switched off the dubbing because the kid dub was so, hey, mommy, what's going on? Like, it really sounded just like that, like me. Maybe they got like a woman who sounded kind of like a kid.
It probably was an adult.
You know, one of those things. And it just felt so flat. And you can tell it's ADR, and it's not, because it doesn't sound like roomy like the things would be in the.
Right.
So it's just, it's kind of movie you don't really need much subtitles. You know, there's not so much plot that's going on that you need to really follow this complicated thing. Now, if you've seen the trailer to Blood Red Sky, you've pretty much seen the movie. It was one of those where I go, oh, maybe Rachel will watch this with me. So we watched the trailer, and I go, you know, I think this is probably going to be most, if not all, of the movie. And it kind of was.
Yeah.
I'm not going to spoil anything that's not in the trailer, but the plot of it is a woman and her son are going to be on this plane. They're trying to go to New York. She's got a blood condition, and there's some scientist doctors that are going to help treat it with some kind of bone marrow thing. They get on the plane. There's terrorists or thieves. It's basically Die Hard on a plane with a vampire, because she's a vampire, and that's what you find out.
Her being a New York City police detective is that she's a vampire.
Yeah.
That's her special.
Yeah. And so there's, you know, they do some interesting things in there that I didn't quite expect to happen, which was good. It did have kind of almost a Lovecraftian wraparound, where the end of the story is the beginning. You know, the kid is rescued from the plane and they're like, what happened, kid? And then they do a flashback. And so
yeah,
you kind of know what's going on, but there's a bunch of loose ends. It was a bit somber. I always feel like with my horror, I need a little bit of levity at some point in there. And there really wasn't any. The main actress is great. She's called Perry Baumeister, and she's really charismatic. She's got a good look about her, even though through a lot of the movie, she's in heavy makeup. That guy, Dominic Purcell, is in there. He's got a smallish role, and he was in Prison Break, but I knew him from the Flash series. He was Heat Wave.
I actually think the other Prison Break actor is who plays Captain Cold in there. So there's some sort of weird, But that guy, Dominic Purcell, he was also a Dracula, actually the Dracula. In Blade Trinity, he was like,
oh, right.
He was shark tooth necklace Dracula. Yeah.
He was Dracula, Dracula.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
He had to fight Ryan Reynolds' abs in that movie.
Oh,
that
right.
The plot. Blood Red Sky also featured German actor Alexander Scheer as the kind of crazy Mr. Blonde type in the crew of terrorists. He looked enough like John Cameron Mitchell, the American actor, that, you know, to Heather and I, that we just called him Hedwig the whole movie. It's just a little, just enough. But that's actually how we remembered it when I turned it on. We were like, wait a minute, is this the one where Hedwig's all crazy? And we're like, ooh, Hedwig's gonna try and figure out how to be a vampire.
Yeah.
And that's how we knew that we'd seen it before. But it does have, I know what you mean about it being a downer, but it's contained, it's fast paced, there's cool twists and turns, like you said.
Yeah.
Maybe you see him coming, but it's still satisfying. It's that kind of quick thriller that I like sometimes. It's hard to be an actor, by the way, without having appeared in some kind of vampire film.
Oh, yeah.
Alexander Scheer, that I just mentioned, was in a movie early in his career called Mein Bruder, der Vampir.
That's My Brother, the Vampire.
That is the name of it. However, the English title is Getting My Brother Laid.
Whoa.
They didn't go for direct translation, and I guess they didn't. Well, they didn't want us showing up at the theater because the movie's actually about a boy who's obsessed with Dracula. So he's not actually a vampire. And his siblings are trying to help him find love. So it's a romantic comedy. It doesn't sound too scary. You'd mentioned that Blood Red Sky reminded you of 30 Days of Night. It did.
And I went back and I watched 30 Days of Night when it came out. I saw it in the theater. It's a 2007 movie. Josh Hartnett's in it. It's directed by David Slade. He did that movie Hard Candy before this. Do you remember that one? It's based on a very cool comic book by Steve Niles and Ben Temple Smith.
So jealous of that concept. The minute I saw the cover of the comic, I knew exactly what the book was about.
Yep.
It's so amazing to be able to communicate a concept with just a title and a little art. And the art's amazing in it.
Yeah.
In the series as well. And I thought the movie was pretty solid.
Yeah. It's about an Alaskan town that is overrun by vampires when they have a month-long night, 30 days of night. For me, going back and looking at it, it's good. I like it. It's really well-paced. It's really interesting. The thing I have a beef with is Josh Hartnett looks like he's 12, and he's supposed to be this grizzled, experienced town sheriff. Oh, I've been around the block so many times. I've seen so many things.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, dude, you haven't. You couldn't have.
I don't know. I think he could have. I think he's about 30 years old in that movie.
Okay.
Which is around the average age of a police officer, I think. So it's,
He's the chief of police in an Alaskan small town. And he's super good looking. So like, why didn't he get out of there?
He wanted to freeze his good looks in place. You will be good looking longer if you live in Alaska.
Also his ex-wife. Science. He's married. He's got this whole relationship with his ex-wife in there.
Yeah.
She's gorgeous as well.
Of course.
Melissa George. She played the character George on Grey's Anatomy, if you watched that show, which I think you did.
Did.
Yeah.
I consume that one, unfortunately, just bouncing off the walls because that's Heather's guilty pleasure. So I know way too much about Grey's Anatomy.
Despite Josh Hartnett trying to be like this really grizzled, experienced guy who's been around the block, which I had a hard time with, it's still really cool. There's really neat stuff.
Yeah, it is. You got Ben Foster just killing it as the Renfield type character. Uh-huh. I love the opening shot when he's, you know, you see the ship in the distance and then he's looking towards the town, very reminiscent of Dracula. And then Danny Houston as Marlowe, the lead vampire.
Yeah.
It's my favorite vampire performance in recent memory. He plays it entirely emotionless and predatory, expressionless. Got those black eyes. It's much more like a shark, the way he's sort of looking around. And then a newish take on the vampire in that they have their own language. They really are a separate species. And that real satanic kind of mission statement, you know, Marlowe says, that which can be broken must be broken. And I just loved that distillation there of the horror of the vampire, that it's not just blood, but it's weakness. If it's seen, it must be explored and exploited.
Uh-huh.
That's why I'd say that was probably one of my favoriteest recent vampire movies last 20 years.
Yeah.
Even though there's been so many.
Yeah, there's been a lot.
Not too many of them are that good. Obviously, we did the Tilda Swinton one last year. Only Lovers Left Alive. And on the satirical front, you know, obviously, What We Do in the Shadows is great. In fact, the 30 Days a Night plot, maybe they've already done it, but I think that would make a great episode of What We Do in the Shadows. If they thought they were going to a 30 Days of Night situation and then got there and there were no humans and there was, you know, the accommodations were bad. It was just sort of a fire festival thing where they're just trapped with a bunch of other vampires in Alaska.
That would be good.
Yeah. But you've mentioned a couple of pretty good flicks so far, and this is supposed to be movies you don't want to talk about.
Well, these are good movies, but I don't think any of them warrant a whole episode
right.
of bonus content to talk about.
Well, you had mentioned or made a pitch for Vamp, maybe.
I did.
When we were talking. And that was because we covered The Wolf Woman by yes. Bassett Morgan, whose real name was Grace Jones.
Right. Yeah.
And you did give it a peek, I believe.
I did. I watched it when it was first came out on HBO, but it was originally released in 1986. And Grace Jones isn't in it very much, which is really disappointing. But it was directed by Richard Wenk. It's supposed to be a horror comedy, but the comedy's not really funny. I mean, I get they're doing kind of funny things. And maybe when I was a teenager in the 80s, it might have been pretty humorous. But
yeah,
I kind of fast forwarded through most of it, and it's pretty slow. The plot is there's these two college frat guys. The actor that played Long Duk Dong in 16 Candles.
16 Candles, yeah.
Getty Watanabe is the actor. And he plays this rich guy that they don't like, but they need his car to get to a city to find some stripper for a frat party.
Okay.
It's sort of interesting because they don't really address the fact that he's Asian in it, and he's not doing a funny accent or any of that stuff. He's just, it's like they cast him.
Right. At that time against
type. Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of a crazy thing to do. Ugh.
Which,
Long Duk Dong, man.
Oh, yeah. Wow. That's rough. So they go to the seedy part of town, and there's this weird club that Grace Jones, who's called Katrina in this, is dancing. She's like a stripper, but she does this crazy art performance kind of stripping thing. And it's cool. She's amazing. She has all this white body paint designs, and she's wearing like a red wig with red lipstick and a white mm-hmm. face. I was surprised to find that Keith Haring, the artist, did all of her body paint for the movie.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
And if you don't know who Keith Haring is, he did all of these really rad kind of almost stick figures, like really kind of thick line stick figures. Very colorful, very life-affirming. He unfortunately passed away of AIDS in the 80s. But he's just like, everything I've ever read about him, he was just like such a great person, and his art so, I don't know,
oh,
joyful.
We have prints of it on all kinds
yeah.
of various
things. Yeah, yeah. Right. If you saw it, you would go, oh yeah, that guy. But I thought this was kind of an interesting story. When Grace Jones was 36, in 1984, she, Andy Warhol, Robert Mapplethorpe, and Keith Haring all were in Mapplethorpe Studio in New York City. They wanted to shoot photos of Jones covered in body paint that Haring was doing. So it's like his distinctive style. The session lasted a marathon 18 hours, during which Jones was photographed by Mapplethorpe. Haring did all of her body paint. And she had this cool headdress and this very kind of ornate skirt. Warhol kind of put it all together. They all kind of just were jamming, like art jamming, I guess. You know, like they're all just trying different stuff and doing all these. But you can yeah. go online and see all these pictures. It's some crazy neat stuff. So I highly recommend. I'll find some links and put it up in the show notes. Haring and Grace Jones got this relationship together, and they decided to keep doing stuff. He and her, like for, I think, one of her music videos, and she performed live. He did her body paint for her. This kind of kept going. And then when she got cast in this movie, they're like, oh mm-hmm. yeah, do that thing, that cool performance art, you know, where you've got the white body paint and the cool styles on there. So Keith Haring actually did her makeup for that movie and stuff. It says here that the look Jones cultivated for Katrina is said to be based on the character played by Daryl Hannah in Blade Runner.
Oh,
I kind of see, you know, where her eyes are done differently.
Yeah, yeah, but I see it.
Yeah.
The wig even, the styling of it.
Yeah. Now, so one of the frat boys gets seduced. He gets turned into a vampire by Grace Jones, but he's able to warn his friend about this vampire club or organization and how they're going to get him. But then he stakes himself.
Oh, my goodness. A self-staking.
because he doesn't want to hurt his friend.
All this time, I've wondered, could I ever do that if I had to? Could I stake myself?
Well, this guy does. And Keith, the surviving frat boy, runs into this waitress who says she knows him and becomes his love interest. I thought there was going to be some betrayal, but there isn't. It feels like an 80s sex comedy, but there's neither sex nor comedy really in it.
Zapped without the zap. It's, you know, Ghoulies 4 is a little like that. It's the genre of this really feels like a porn, but there's no sex or anything erotic at all. It's just kind of the sets and the actors.
Yeah. At the end of the movie, I'm going to spoil it a little bit. The guy that staked himself turned out he was fine, and he rescued the hero at the end. And the girl, they beat Grace Jones, who's like the big bad vampire at the very end. But then this minion of hers is going to kill them. And then this guy who we thought was dead because he staked himself, we're like, how did you get through this? And he goes, that table leg that I stabbed myself with? For Micah.
Oh, look at that. That's pretty good. That's worth 2 hours of your life.
Well, you know, after we talked about Anne Rice, I did go back and rewatch the entirety of Interview with a Vampire from 1994.
Oh, interesting, because I've been seeing that pop up, but I never, yeah. Does it hold up?
In a way, yes. It's still pretty good. It moves so fast. They cram that whole book in the movie. And the performances are really good. What I forgot or just didn't stick with me was is that it's dripping with homoeroticism.
It really is. Yeah, like, I remember that.
Wow. I couldn't believe how sexually charged all the stuff with Brad Pitt and Tom Cruise was.
And Antonio Banderas. And
oh my God, Antonio Banderas. Yes. Yeah. I don't know. It feels so Anne Rice vampire-y, as it should.
But I thought that was right on. I remember seeing it with some buddies who weren't as familiar with the books.
Yeah.
And they were a little, without saying it, I don't know, there's something I didn't like. But I was like, no, I loved it. I loved that we almost kiss thing because it's these vampires. It's like we said when we covered the Rampling story. Mm-hmm. You know, they're just in love with each other. Everybody's in love with each other. And it's I thought it was pretty accurate that way.
Yeah. It's sort of a little stilted because there's a lot of narration. Obviously, because the whole framing of that book is that he is telling a reporter his life story. Louis is.
Mm-hmm. It's the character from Pump Up the Volume. He's going to go play that interview out in the parking lot and get everybody.
Christian Slater plays him, in the movie.
Right.
Kirsten Dunst is so good. You know, she's like, I think she's 12 in the movie.
Yeah,
she's young. In the book,
she just shows up and owns it.
Oh my God, yeah, she's so captivating, and she does. Yeah. And they're all horrible. Like that's one thing I kind of forgot about is how cruel they were, and just they're monsters. You know, you want something written from the viewpoint of the monster, and like wow, that it's been years since I've read Interview with a Vampire. I've read that in high school, and I'm pushing 50 now, so.
Yeah, they're doing all that mean stuff to Thandie Newton and
they kill a whole family. You know, there's that scene where they're Claudia's playing the piano and Lestat is like kind of standing next to her, and then there's whole family, like grandma, husband and wife, all these kids, all these other people, and then they cut to all of these coffins coming out, like this mass funeral for all these people. I'm like, oh my God, it's so brutal.
It's a horror movie
for nostalgia's sake. I would say watch it again, and I think you'll really like it. And that's Neil Jordan was the guy that directed that, who I think he did Crying Game as well.
Oh yeah, and he did a werewolf. He did that Angela Lansbury werewolf movie. It was kind of his first thing.
Company of Wolves.
The Company of Wolves is a Neil Jordan movie as well. Yeah, he's a great director. It was a perfect choice for that movie, I think. It's certainly, you know, I did see Interview with the Vampire is on Netflix right now because I wanted to get to Blood Red Sky, and so I just lazily typed vampire into the search engine. And boy, I was like, oh my goodness, we were wondering what to cover. There was the Vampire Diaries, there's Vampire Academy, Vampires versus the Bronx. That one I actually watched. It was okay. But if you haven't seen Attack the Block, please watch Attack the Block instead, because it was just sort of a vampire reskinning of that. My Babysitter's a Vampire was on there. Liar, Liar, Vampire. Rad. There's something new called Night Teeth, and I think that is, again, a vampire reskinning of Collateral. Am I right?
Oh, yeah, I started watching it and it didn't seem very good. Kind of Vampire the Masquerade-ish, And I was like, oh, I want to watch it. But the beginning of it was so clunky and seemed low budge.
Yeah.
Because the trailer looks really pro and flashy and stuff.
When I read the description, I thought that is basically Collateral.
Collateral Vampires. Vampires instead of
just Lestat. Gray-haired Lestat. You still like Tom Cruise in that movie.
I love Tom Cruise. If Tom Cruise plays somebody who's a sociopath, he's really good. But if I'm supposed to think that he's like somebody's dad, no.
Mm-hmm.
I do not buy it for
right,
a second.
Exactly. Yeah, like War of the Worlds.
Yeah.
For some reason, I'm like, I think Dakota Fanning'd be on her own. You just keep running. You're really good at running down the street. I love him, though, when he's in roles like that. I think he's awesome. This probably comes down to something we've been discussing, though, since we kicked off the year with Anne Rice.
Yeah.
The vampire as protagonist versus antagonist. So it's good that you brought that up.
Yeah.
It, you know, once you're on the vampire side, it becomes more of a superhero story sometimes.
Yes.
Being extraordinary but wanting normality, I assume Vampire Academy or The Vampire Diaries is something like that. Or the character versus the institution, which I'm not normally interested in Interview the Vampire, because it has that element of horror. I am interested in it. What did you think of the new Morbius movie that was been getting trailered pretty heavily now? You interested, or did you read that character a lot in the comics?
Yeah, well, of course I read the character. I was a big Spider-Man fan, and he came out of Spider-Man, I think.
Yeah, yeah, he's in the Rogues Gallery.
I don't care much for the Venom movie. I saw the first one. I haven't seen the second one. There's just something about the feel of it that doesn't seem quite right. And Morbius has that same feel to it.
Yeah.
And I've never really been into Venom. I thought Venom was kind of a sort of interesting villain at one point, but then they kind of made him into a hero because people liked him so much.
I know. Venom is just McFarlane. Look at McFarlane go.
You know,
I mean, it just seems to me like more of an art exercise, and then there wasn't too much behind it, but it's such a cool looking dude.
Yeah. And his catchphrase was, "I want to eat your brains." How is that guy getting redeemed? I never bought it.
Well, sometimes, like in the Thunderbolts, it's cool because he wants to eat brains, but they make him do. I always liked it when that happens, when they have to force somebody who's really terrible to do something good, but they're still doing it against their will, so they remain terrible.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting. I'll kill some suspense here. I do want to do marches for Dracula again. I don't think it's played out. I think there's always something, some new angle you can take on it. Although I will say this, the tropes in new, interesting ways is getting a little played out for me.
Yeah.
And so if I could pitch early, I would like to finally do Vampire City by Paul Favall.
Oh, right.
Which we've teased a bit before. Mm-hmm. And actually, I think Ken Height, he said, no, I haven't read that. And he kind of challenged us to be maybe the experts on it. I'm going to read it early.
Okay.
So this is possibly something we won't do. But it predates Dracula, so it just doesn't have the tropes. I know that these vampires like to consume hair in it. And maybe some of them are clockwork.
Gross.
They glow green. There's all kinds of weird stuff. The main character is actually the gothic novelist Anne Radcliffe.
Hmm.
And she's got like a weird crew of vampire hunters. I think one of them is a trans character.
Oh, wow.
That like attack this vampire city. It's a spoof on the gothic novel. And so people say it's really the earliest example of a horror comedy. It's from 1867.
Oh.
It's part of a trilogy. There's not explicitly, I think there's a book before it, but it's about some different characters. This one is the craziest one. I don't think Stoker read it.
Hmm.
In the afterword to the book, Vampire City, Brian Stableford says both authors made use of the same 18th century text, Dissertation sur les Apparitions d'Esprit et sur les Vampires by the biblical scholar Dom Augustin Calme. So they both looked back at that, but neither of them looked at each other's stuff. So that's it. So it's almost like the Neanderthal cousin of the vampire, this weird stuff.
Mm.
So I think we just need to reach back a little bit in order to get some difference I'm craving.
Yeah.
I'd like to pitch that for next year. Now, to tie it back around, I Am Legend.
Mm, okay.
Another Netflix series that is in the zombie vein that's similar to it is Kingdom.
Oh, really?
Have you watched that?
No.
It's a South Korean production. I think it's Netflix's first one. I know it did really good numbers for them. It's a historical horror.
Mm.
I just thought it was excellent, partially because the zombies obeyed slightly different rules. I just assumed I was going in, same old zombies.
Sure.
Maybe these are fast moving or slow moving. They had different rules that actually made them a little like the vampires in I Am Legend. And those discoveries are part of the fun, so I'm not going to spoil it if you haven't seen it. But it's got the neat historical setting, which is a little invented. I think it's kind of an embellished version of medieval Korea, kind of like Game of Thrones would be to Europe. It's worth watching just for everybody's dope hats and necklaces on that point. Like, it's just awesome costuming. I watch a lot of these feudal Japanese movies that are somewhat historically accurate with the get-ups. And this thing, I know it's somewhat historically accurate for Korean medieval times, but it's also, it's pretty artistic. I just like looking at the show. Oh. But the protagonist is a crown prince. He kind of has to learn leadership, somewhat of a Shakespearean character who's had a lot of greatness handed to him, but has to really go through the ringer to become truly great. And his counterpart is this physician who she's trying to figure out what's going on and how all of this started, because it's got a pandemic angle.
Okay.
To begin with, that this thing spreads because of corruption in the government. Kind of plays out against that backdrop. If you like I Am Legend, if you also like Game of Thrones, I'd recommend it.
Oh, wow.
It's taking a lot of the same concepts and trying them out. Period action piece. I really think it's fun. It's melodramatic, but I really enjoyed it.
All right.
So, good. Anyway, between that and Vampire City, I guess these show what I'm looking for to breathe life back into the vampire is a... You know, don't do it for its own sake, but a justified inversion of the tropes.
Yes.
Even just some crazy making of some kind. Mm-hmm. When I think about my first encounter with vampires, it was technically the cartoonish Dracula, because I know I was dressing up like that for Halloween. But I think really it was seeing that clip of Nosferatu on TV, because it was this creepy inhuman thing gliding up those stairs. It was a monster and it was horrifying. Yeah. I'm looking for some breaking of expectations, and I'm looking for that scary vampire again.
Yeah.
How about you? What are your vampire needs?
I've been hankering to jump back into vampire role-playing games for some reason. I've been reading the 5th Ed Vampire the Masquerade. They've changed the setting a bit. They've moved things around. It's interesting, and I don't know why I'm compelled to those stories even further. I played Vampire the Masquerade for years. Years I played it.
Yeah.
And many campaigns. And yet, for me, the genre has lots of different types of stories that can be told, and there's still other stories that I find interesting. And I'm surprised that there hasn't been a vampire television series like that, you know, like complex machinations. I mean, there's been Vampire Diaries, which I watched, but
well, they tried to Kindred the Embrace.
Oh, they did. Yes, they did.
Oh, by the way, the weirdest thing happened. I was out getting hamburgers with Heather the other day, and somebody at the bus stop in front of the Shaka Shack left the entire DVD collection of Forever Night, the television show. That was it. There were no other random DVDs around it or anything. I took a photograph of it, so I'll put that up when we post this show. But what an odd thing, just in bright daylight. There was the three, it's a lot of discs, too. That show was on for a few seasons.
It was on a long time.
The Vampire Cop.
Wasn't that Rick Springfield in the original TV movie, and then they made a series based on the TV movie?
Is that for real?
Yeah, it was called Nick Knight. It came out in 1989.
Oh, well, maybe the person watched the whole series and then found out they had missed that and were mad. So they were grabbing the bus to go buy the Rick Springfield pilot and left those at the...
That's probably what happened. And, you know, this was after Lost Boys came out, so I think it had a real Lost Boys kind of feel to it.
What did? Forever Night?
Nick Knight. The movie.
Oh, you mean it had the kind of bat-like vampire makeup?
Yeah. I don't remember the story. It's been so long since I watched it, but I watched it when it was on, and I thought it was super cool, and obviously a lot of people thought it was cool because they based a whole television series around it.
Yeah, a lot of bus riders like it. I know that. Like, for some reason, keep going. I'm trying to figure out what you would do. Like, what would I do if somebody said, you can have all of the Universal horror movies?
Oh, wow. Okay.
What would you do? What would you pitch? And I thought about it long and hard, because Dracula obviously has just been beaten to a pulp.
Sure.
I mean, people have taken this character everywhere. And I thought, well, maybe I could do a kind of a sequel. I looked it up, and there actually, of course, are a million Dracula sequels.
Sure.
One of them's called Dracula the Undead from 2009.
Oh, whoa.
And it's written by his great-grandnephew, Docker Stoker, with Ian Holt, who previously had been a direct-to-DVD horror screenwriter, so these two did it. That leads me to believe maybe Ian Holt's the ghostwriter and is trading in on the name, but I don't know that. Stoker was a track and field coach before writing this novel. That's true. But hey, Bram Stoker was a theater guy.
Sure.
Up till then, his biggest innovation was rubbing his mustache on patrons to kind of get him excited. So, but my sequel, I don't know if anybody would want to see it. Okay. I don't want Dracula in it.
No.
I think he's dead.
Sure.
I don't think... If you know he can come back at the beginning of your next movie, then why is the next movie scary? Because you just, no matter what they do to him, he'll probably come back again. I always never liked that. Let Dracula go. I think do a King Kong thing where the book's a found document. No Bram Stoker's in it or anything like that. It's just Mina Harker maybe passed away and somebody got a hold of it. And they go, those brides are probably still around in Transylvania. Let's go.
Right.
And then just go to Transylvania with the film crew or whatever it is. And I'd love to see that movie. Other vampires. What did he leave behind? Maybe there was a reason Dracula needed to get out of Transylvania.
Why doesn't
anybody explore that stuff?
That sounds cool.
If Universal wants me to do it, I'll do it. I'm just,
okay.
I'm busy.
I know. You got a lot going on.
I'm in Wisconsin right now, but I know.
If they want me to, I'll do
it. After that, you'll have some time.
Reach out. We've got lots of ideas. Hey, I can't believe we filled the time, but we sure did.
We sure did. It's easy to talk about vampire movies because there's so many of them, for crying out loud. And yeah. I'm glad that we got these out of the way and let everybody know that these are movies that we are not going to cover on bonus content.
That's right.
So, sorry, folks.
Every once in a while, you need a non-example. And this entire episode was that. But it was still fun to talk about all this stuff. And next month, we've got more kooky stuff to talk about with you all. Thanks for tuning into this and for supporting us at this level.
You're the special people.
Going. Yeah, that's all I got. I'm Chad Pfeiffer.
I'm Chris Lackey, and you've been listening to Bonus Content for Strange Studies of Strange Stories.
Exclusively on Patreon.
HBpodcast.com. We'll be right back.